We're holding the book of Shmuel, and we are seeing how Saul took David as his son-in-law. David had married Saul's daughter Michal, and then a bad spirit kept plaguing Saul, and Saul wanted to kill David. And no matter what he tried, David seemed to be continuously successful. We had seen how Saul tried to kill David with a dagger. We saw the story twice, and the second time he sent his men to David's home to take him, and his daughter Michal said he was ill. At the same time, she had let David down out the window. David had fled. Saul ordered his men to bring David's bed, and when they brought the bed, they saw that really David wasn't there. And Saul realizes that his daughter had tricked him. He asks her, "What you do?" She says, "I didn't have a choice. He threatened my life. What kind of gangster did you get me to marry?" David runs to Shmuel, and Saul sends his men to Shmuel. Three times he sends soldiers to bring David in, and each time the soldiers prophesize until Saul himself goes to Shmuel and he himself starts prophesizing. And as he's prophesizing, David escapes. And David comes to Yonatan and he says, "What did I do wrong? Why does your father want me dead?" And he says, "God forbid, my father wouldn't do anything without telling me." And David says, "No, it must be because your father knows that we're good friends, that he hasn't told you." So Yonatan says, "Well, what do you want? That's what I'll do." And David tells Yonatan, "Look, tomorrow is going to be Rosh Chodesh. Your father has his regular feast. And when your father asks where I am, I'm his son-in-law. I'm one of his generals. He expects me there at the royal banquet in honor of Rosh Chodesh. Tell him that my family had a family reunion like we do every year, and that's why you sent me off. If he responds kindly, so then that'll be a sign that he's really okay with me. And if you see him get all upset because I'm not there, you'll know that really I'm right. He wants me dead. If I did something wrong, you kill me. But why bring me to your father?" Yonatan says, "God forbid. If I know that my father wants to harm you, I'll let you know. Of course I won't conceal that from you." So David asks Yonatan, "Who's going to tell me? Your father knows we're friends. There's a good possibility you're going to be followed. How are you going to get word to me what the situation is?" So Yonatan and David both go out to the field. As we mentioned in last week's Parsha's Vayetze, that if you want to discuss a secret, don't do it in a room where there are doors, because you never know who's listening behind the door. So they go out to the field, and Yonatan tells David, "I will try to seek out my father tomorrow and the next day, the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, and hopefully things are going to be good, I'll tell you. But make the pact with me that your house won't harm my house, because God will ultimately get rid of all your enemies." And they make the pact, and Yonatan prays that Hashem should allow David to overcome all his enemies. Don't forget, Yonatan and David are brother-in-laws. David has married Yonatan's sister. David has married Michal, the daughter of Saul. And they make a pact, they swear again to one another, and Yonatan tells them, "Okay, tomorrow Rosh Chodesh, they're going to notice you're missing. You hide. And you hide over here by this stone. This is a stone called Evan Hazel. It's a marker. People always say, 'I'll meet you by that stone,' or 'make a left turn after that stone, before that stone.' It's a marker. Everyone knows that stone. And I'll come out here. I'll shoot my arrows. And I'll make believe I'm aiming for a target. And I'll tell the lad to go and fetch the arrows. And if I tell the lad, go further, if I tell the lad, bring the arrows back, you know everything's okay, you could come back. And if I tell the lad, the arrows are more distant, go far out in order to pick them up, so you know that God has sent you. And our pact should remain forever." David hides in the field. Doesn't have food. Day number one of Rosh Chodesh, Saul has his feast. David's seat is empty, and Saul doesn't say anything. He says maybe he was impure Maybe he was with his wife and he was impure, and that's why he couldn't come eat from the feast. The next day of Rosh Chodesh, David's seat is empty, and Shaul asks his son Yonasan, he says, why didn't the son of Yishai come yesterday and the day and today? And Yonasan tells his father, he says, David asked permission to go to Beis Lechem, to his family. He says they have a yearly gathering, and I gave him permission. That's why he's not here. And Shaul gets upset at Yonasan, and he tells him, Ben Na'avat Amaldut, you son of the rebellious one. Your mother was rebellious when all the other men were grabbing wives from the girls that were dancing, as we discussed last week. So your mother went out and grabbed me. And I know that you're rebellious like her, that you really want the son of Yishai to succeed. It's really an embarrassment to you and your mother. All the days that the son of Yishai is living on the earth, you and your kingdom will not be established. And now send, fetch him over here, because he deserves to get killed. And Yonasan tells his father, he says, why should he get killed? What did he do wrong? And Shaul picks up his spear as if to hit Yonasan, and Yonasan knows that his father wants David dead. So Yonasan is upset. He loves David. He leaves the table with a fury, and that day he doesn't eat because he's upset with David, the way his father embarrassed him. And the following morning, Yonasan goes out to the field. David's been fasting for 2 days now. Yonasan's been fasting for 1 day now. And Yonasan goes out to the field. He has a young lad with him, and he starts shooting his arrow, and he tells his lad, go quickly, go fetch the arrows. And the lad is running out. He shoots another arrow, and Yonasan calls out to the lad. He tells him, no, you gotta go further, the arrow's far away. Go quickly, don't stand, quickly get the arrows and run. And this is a message for David. The lad gathers the arrows, he comes back, and he doesn't know about the secret message that was passed, and only David and Yonasan know. Yonasan gives him his weapons, and he tells him, go bring them back home. And after the lad leaves, David arises from his hiding place, and he bows 3 times to Yonasan. They kissed, they hugged, and they cried until David surpassed Yonasan's crying. And Yonasan tells David, Lech l'shalom, go to peace. Our vow will remain between me and you, between our offsprings, my children and your children forever. Remember this vow, because David will not keep his end of the deal. And David will err. He will think that one of Yonasan's children tried to join a rebellion against him, and he will punish that child of Yonasan. And when he punishes that child, a heavenly voice comes out and says, you decreed that half of that child's wealth goes to his servant, while half of your kingdom is leaving. You divided his wealth, you divided Yonasan's son's wealth, then I'm dividing your kingdom. And that's why from David's grandson's time and on, we have 2 kingdoms in the land of Israel, Judah and Israel. That's one of the reasons.
What was the terms of the oath?
David said to Mephibosheth, Yonasan's son, he said, I've ruled, he told him, you and Tziva, the servant, will divide your wealth. That was a punishment.
David and Yonatan
made a pact. Mm-hmm. They made a brit. And when David ruled against Yonasan's son, David erred. We'll learn the whole story in Mitzvah. 2 or 3 months.
What was the terms of the brief?
The terms are just that we'll each stand up for one another's children, and we'll be faithful to one another and to our offsprings. Yonasan comes back to the city, and Yonasan has made a great mistake. Yonasan didn't bring any food. David has spent 2 days fasting, and he's hungry. He has no weapons, he has no food, and he's on the run. He knows his father-in-law, the king, wants him dead. And he comes to the city of Nov, the city of Kohanim. And when he comes alone to the city of Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol Achimelech rushes over to him. He isn't accustomed to seeing David coming without his weapons, without his men. And he's worried, what's going on? So he rushes over to David and he asks him, why are you alone? Why isn't anyone with you? And David tells him, he says, the king sent me on a secret mission, and I hid my lads at over yonder. No one knows where they are. And now give me whatever bread you have, because I have an important mission for the king. And Ahimelech tells him, he says, I don't have any bread. The only bread I have is the holy bread, the lechem apanim, the holy bread that's before Hashem. Are you certain that your lads are pure enough, that they haven't been with their wives, that they can touch this bread? And David tells him, oh, we've been traveling 3 days already. My men haven't been with their wives. And when we left to camp, I saw that all my lads were pure. Their vessels were all holy. And don't worry about it. Give me the bread, because we must go. And the Kohen gives him the holy bread. David is on the verge of dying. He's been fasting 2 days. And he knows it's pikuach nefesh. If he doesn't have that bread, he's going to die. So for pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to eat holy bread and you're allowed to tell stories. And that's what David does.
Question. If he can eat the bread for pikuach nefesh, why does it matter whether he's clean or not?
You're right. It didn't really matter. The Kohen wanted to be extra careful with the bread. But in truth, it would make no difference whether he was pure or not. Halachically. So, as David is speaking to Ahimelech the Kohen, present during this conversation is a man by the name of Doeg HaAdomi. And Doeg is a person who has it in for David from day one. When David went out against Goliath, against Goliath, Doeg was the one who said, don't worry about him, he's not fit to even marry a Jewish woman, don't worry about him becoming king. And he started saying, because his grandmother was Rus, he's not fit for anything. Doeg is the one that got Shaul riled up against David by speaking about this lad in a way that he would ensure that Shaul would be jealous of him. And Shaul said, we'll look for some lad to come play the harp before me. So Doeg piped in. He started describing David in a way that would ensure Shaul would be jealous. And now Doeg is over there praying before the Mishkan. He's come to do some meditation, some holy prayer, and he overhears this conversation. David asks Ahimelech the Kohen, he asks him, do you maybe have a spear or a sword? Because I was in such a rush when the king sent me, I didn't take my sword with me. And the Kohen tells him, the only sword I have here is the sword that you took from Goliath. You left it here as a show, to show the great miracle that God did for the Jewish people. That's all I have. So David tells him, there's none like it. That's the best sword there is. Give it to me. And David takes the sword and the bread and he runs. He has nowhere to go. He knows that Shaul is going to try to kill him. So he goes over into enemy territory. He goes over into Philistine territory to the king of Gath, the Philistine king Abimelech, also known as Achish. Now, a short time before this, our sages tell us David had seen a man who was insane, standing at the city gates with saliva coming down his throat, scratching on the walls. And David looked at that man and he turned to God and he said, God, why'd you create such creatures in the world? Why'd you create people who were insane? And God said, you'll see. So David comes to Achish, to the Philistine territory. This is the man who's been wiping out Philistines right and left. And Achish, also known as Abimelech, he's got a personal problem. His wife is insane and his daughter is insane. And whenever he comes home, his wife is yelling and his daughter is yelling and they're driving him up the wall. So David comes to Philistine territory and Achish's servants, they tell him, that's David. That's the David who everyone says he kills tens of thousands in a war. We shouldn't let him stay around by us. He's our arch enemy. And David gets wind of what's going on. So they put David in prison. And they're not sure, is it David or not? Why would David come to our territory? And when David is in prison, he suddenly remembers that insane person he saw. And he starts scratching on the walls, and he starts yelling, and he starts having saliva drool down his beard. And the servants tell Achish, "We got David." And Achish says, "Show me." So they bring him down into the cell, and he sees David. And there's David acting like an insane person. As he was standing there, he remembered that insane person he saw, and he said, "Well, let me fake it. Let's see if it works." So he's standing there scratching the walls, yelling, saliva drooling down his beard, and Achish looks at him and he tells the servants, "You think that's David? What are you, nuts? Am I lacking crazy people in my house? Get him out of here." And that's how David escaped. And when we say Shabbos morning, we say a verse of Tehillim. We say, remember?
It's in our school. I think the art school commentary refers to this. So it's in the Siddur.
Okay, thank you. We say Shabbos morning, we say in part of the chapters of Tehillim that we say in Shabbos morning, we say, Lidavid, verse 34, a song that David composed, Bishanoto et ha'amon lifnei Avimelech, when he changed his sanity before Avimelech, Vayigarsheyu, and Avimelech chased him away, Vayilach, and he left. So, David HaMelech sang this song after seeing it, after seeing that this was necessary, that everything that God created has wisdom, everything that God created has beauty, and everything has a purpose. So David HaMelech walked out of there and he composed this song. Yeah.
When David HaMelech was captured, I assume they took away the sword of Goliath?
No. Yeah. Seems like they did not take away the sword of Goliath.
So they let him know with the sword?
Seems that way. I guess they figured if they have him in their cell, seems like he had it. But I don't know. I was also wondering that. I was looking to see if someone would address it. I didn't see.
And,
the Mefarshim explain that the Philistine king was known as Avimelech, just like the Egyptian king is known as Pharaoh, even though it's not the same person. It was a general name for kings. So, thank you. So David flees to the cave of Adullam, and his siblings, his father's family, hears that he has fled, and they go down to him. I guess they also felt they were in danger. And any person who was in trouble, who was poor, who was being oppressed, any person who had troubles in his life, they would flee and they would join David's band. And David became an officer over this band of bitter people. He had about 400 men. And from there, David took his family to the Moabites. Don't forget, David comes from Ruta Moabiah, from the Moabites. And he tells the king of Moab, he says, "Do me a favor, take care of my father and mother. Let them be with you till I see what God has in store for me." And the king of Moab takes them, and he promises David will take good care of them. And then David goes to a fortification near the Moabites. The prophet God sends word to David that he should leave that fortification and enter Judean territory. Don't forget, David comes from the family of Yehuda, from the tribe of Yehuda. To an extent, the tribe of Yehuda had thought that the first king would be from them. Therefore, David, they want David as king. He's one of theirs. So God tells David, he gives him a prophecy, he should leave this fortification and go to the lands of Yehuda. David does that. As soon as David distances himself from Moabite territory, the king of Moab kills out his whole family. David is left without parents, without siblings. They're about to kill his last relative when the king of Ammon intervenes and tells the king of Moab, leave this one behind. And that's why later we are going to see that David tries to repay the king of Moab for that kindness. Doesn't work, but he tries. The king of Ammon, right. The king of Moab will also repay for what he did. But now David is left with a father-in-law that wants him dead. A wife he can't come close to. His parents, his whole family is wiped out. Shaul hears that David and his men have been spotted. And he's sitting on a hilltop under a tree in Eshel, and he's holding his spear, and all his servants are standing around him. And Shaul tells his servants, listen, you people from the tribe of Benjamin, all of you probably have it in for David. He's probably going to give you all prizes when he becomes king. He'll make you officers, he'll give you good positions. You're all probably part of this coup, because none of you thought it fit to tell me when my son made a pact with the son of Yishai. No one cares about me. No one thought they have to tell me what's going on. No one thought they have to tell me that my son has established my servant as an ambush for me. It's interesting that Shaul does not view David as a son-in-law. Shaul could have taken this whole scenario and said, fine, God decreed I lose the kingdom, but it's staying in the family, so it's my son-in-law. Shaul doesn't view it that way. Shaul views him as an enemy, and he sees that his son won't get it. Now, Shaul's servants were put on the spot. Think about it. How many times does this happen? That everyone's sitting together, and a parent gets upset, or someone else that we respect, a friend gets upset. Usually it sounds a little different. Usually we hear someone who we value getting upset at someone, and we feel like we could show we empathize by adding fuel to the fire. It's as though, yeah, I agree, yeah, this person really is so bad because of A, B, and C. So all the servants are standing around, and Shaul is telling them, you're all in on this. You all want me down. And one servant starts talking. Doeg is standing there and he says, I saw the son of Yishai come to Nov, Tachimelech, and he asked Achimelech that he wants to ask God a question, and Achimelech treated him like he would a king. He let him ask a question from through the high priest, through the Kohen Gadol to Hashem. And Achimelech gave him food, and he gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Shaul sends word to Achimelech, and he tells him, come here with your whole family. They come. Yeah.
What does it mean when he said that he used the Kohen Gadol to ask God a question?
So, the Kohen Gadol would wear a breastplate. He wore the Urim Metumim, with the different stones of the different tribes. And when a king or anyone who's representing the public had a question that was for the benefit of the public, so then he could come and stand behind the coin. They would have this procession. The coin would stand before the holy or the holy of holies. He would stand by the Aron, and the man would stand behind him, facing his back, and he'd say the question, and then the coin would be able to look down at his breastplate, and he'd see different letters light up, and he'd give him the answer with Ruach HaKodesh. He'd put the letters together, and he'd give him the answer. Now, David did this, but David had always done this, because David was our chief representative. He was the chief general. So as chief of staff, that was part of his job. So when he came to Achimelech, Achimelech didn't think anything of it. He said, I want to ask God a question. Achimelech said, fine, just as he had done in the past. But Doeg presented it as though Achimelech gave him the rights of a king. He allowed him to ask God. He allowed him to do what really Yushal should have done. So Shaul calls in the Kohen Gadol and he speaks to him very harshly. He says, "Listen up, son of Achituv." And Achimelech, the son of Achituv, says, "Here I am, my master." So he says, "Why have you joined the rebellion against me with the son of Yishai? When you gave him a sword, you gave him bread, you asked God on his behalf, why have you helped him join, why have you helped him arise in ambush on me today?" And Achimelech says, "What do you mean? Your most trusted servant is David. He's your son-in-law. He's the one who does whatever you ask him to do. Who's the most honored one in your house? It's David. Why shouldn't I do it? Is today the first day that I ask for him? He's always the general who comes and I ask God on his behalf. Don't think that I or my father's family wanted to rebel against you. I didn't know anything about this." And Shaul tells him, "Achimelech, you're going to die and your father's family is going to die." And then Shaul turns to his soldiers and he tells them, "Surround the Kohanim and kill them. They have joined forces with David and they knew he was running and they didn't tell me and they have to be killed." And Shaul turns to his top two generals, Amasa ben Yeser and Avner ben Ner. Avner ben Ner is his cousin and Amasa is also high up there. So Amasa and Avner look at one another and they say, "He's wrong. The halacha is not like him. They do not deserve to be killed. But he's the king. Do we listen or do we not?" So they sit down and they look at the Torah and they say, "The Torah says we have to listen to a king. But when we gave the first king power, when we gave Yoshua power, we told Yoshua, anyone that doesn't listen to you will get killed. Rak chazak v'ematz. The only thing we ask of you is you should be strong." So when the Jewish people gave power to the first leader after Moshe, they said, "Anyone who doesn't listen to you will get killed, just except you have to be strong, chazak v'ematz. You have to follow the way of the Torah." When they said, "Whoever does not listen to you will be killed, rak," except, they were saying, they were including a clause. They were saying, "Anyone who doesn't listen to you, Yeshua, will be killed, except if you're asking them to do something that's against the Torah." When they added that except was a hidden clause that said, except for when you ask them to do something that's against the Torah. So his top two generals turned to him and say, "Shaul, no, we're not doing it." So Shaul turns to Doeg and he tells him, "You do it, Doeg. You're the one who testified. You say that they were in cahoots with David." And Doeg surrounded the Kohanim and he killed 85 Kohanim on the spot. That's what it seems like. He was a top soldier. He proceeded to go to the city of Kohanim to Nov and wiped out the whole city, man, woman, child, baby, ox, donkey, sheep. Everything was destroyed. One Kohen remained. We almost saw a period where there would be no Kohanim. One Kohen remained. The son of Achimelech, his name is Evyosar, he ran away. He managed to escape. Everyone else was wiped out. Let's stop for a second. Who ordered this mass murder? A person who said, "I can't kill the women of Amalek. I can't kill the children of Amalek. I can't kill the animals of Amalek. God doesn't want to kill people mercilessly." When Shaul came to Amalek and said, "I can't do this to Amalek," a heavenly voice came out and said, "Al tehi tzadik al ben. Don't you be extra righteous. God told you what to do. Do what God said." And now when Shaul ordered the murder of all of the Kohanim, a heavenly voice came out and said, "Bal tirshah al ben. And don't be extra wicked." That's a verse in Koheles, in Ecclesiastes. King Solomon says, don't be too pious, don't be too wicked. When a person goes to extremes, very often he jumps from one extreme to the other. Chazal said, our sages said, that kol hamrachem al achzarim, whoever shows that he's going to have extra compassion and mercy on people who are cruel, so far ultimately his end will be sheyitachzer al rachmanim. He will be cruel to those who are really merciful people, which is exactly what we saw happened here. And if you look at history, you see that that's exactly what's been happening in history. You don't have to look further than the last 5 years. The same court that said you can't kick Jews out of you can't kick Arabs out of their home. A home, they said, is not just four walls. A home is something which a person builds, a person becomes attached to. You can't kick Arabs out of their home. That same court had no problem kicking Jews out of their home.
Would they really have had to say that to Yeshua? I mean, just the fact that the king gets his authority from the Torah, wouldn't it be that anything he says in contradiction to Torah?
I would think that's so, but the Gemara says what I said. Yeah. I was quoting the Gemara.
Okay.
I wasn't saying on my own understanding.
If you say just one Kohen escape, that literally means that he was the only existing Kohen.
So we'll quote the Gemara now.
That
now we're going to quote a Gemara. That's what it seems like. Your point is so good, you'll see in a few chapters that your point is a question that I have on this Gemara. The Gemara seems to say only one remained. But the point you're saying that it seems like all Kohanim had to come from this Kohen, we're going to see it's not so. We're going to see that in a few chapters. That there are Kohanim from two different descendants. It's not like all Kohanim boiled down to one. And yet the Gemara does seem to say it all boiled down to one. So let's leave that as a question for now. But the question is very, very good.
But not all the Kohanim live in this one town.
Oh, so you'd say not all the Kohanim live in this one town. If not for the Gemara, we wouldn't say all the Kohanim were murdered. If not for the Gemara. In a second we'll see the Gemara. Yeah. Right? Okay, so let's see the Gemara. Let's just continue a little bit. David hears that all of the Kohanim were murdered. Avyasar, the one Kohen that managed to escape, runs to David. And David says, you know, I knew on that day that Doeg was there and that he would tell Shaul, I caused the death of your family, he tells Avyasar. I take blame for it. Stay with me. Whoever helps me will help you. And you're with me from now on, because the same person who's trying to kill me is trying to kill you. You stay with me and I'll protect you. So Avyasar stays with David. Notice how David takes responsibility. The Gemara says, during the period of the first temple, Sanherib came with his men, the Assyrian king, after expanding his empire tremendously. He came and conquered the 10 tribes of the north. And then he proceeded and he conquered most of Judea and he lays siege on Jerusalem. So the Gemara tells us what happened when he lays siege on Jerusalem. We know from the Bible that when he came to lay siege on Jerusalem, God sent out an angel, and that night most of his soldiers were killed, and that's how the city was saved. The Gemara gives us a little bit more background. The Gemara says, the verse states in Yeshaya, Od ayom benov la'amod, Isaiah discusses how Sanherib said, oh, there's still time and Nov to come. Yinofef yado, he waved his hand, Hal Batzion, on the mountain of Zion, Givat Yerushalayim, that's a small hilltop, Jerusalem, Sanherib said. Sanherib said, that's just a small hilltop, I'll take it easily. So what does it mean that Sanherib was coming to destroy Jerusalem and he looked down at Jerusalem from Nov? What was he doing in the city of Nov? Looking at Jerusalem saying, oh, it's not a big deal. I'll take that hilltop. It's just a hill. Amar Ravuna. Ravuna says, that day in which Sanherib was coming to destroy Jerusalem was the last day that remained in which God was angry at the Jewish people over the destruction of Nov. Hundreds of years have passed from the point we're studying now, where the whole city of Kohanim was wiped out, and God held the Jewish people accountable till this day. So Sanherib is standing about to attack Jerusalem, and this is the last day in which God is going to hold this sin against the Jewish people. What do we see here? We see that everyone was held accountable for this. Even though one man, Doeg, went ahead and did it, this reflected a disgrace and a lacking in the Jewish people as a whole. So the whole Jewish people were held accountable, and God held us accountable for a few hundred years till this point, till this day. His stargazers told him, if you go today to conquer Jerusalem, you will succeed. So Sanherib is being told by his stargazers, today you will conquer Jerusalem, and if you don't, you will not succeed in conquering Jerusalem. He had to cover a distance of 10 days' journey to get to Jerusalem. God made a miracle, and he made it in one day. When he came to Jerusalem, his servants spread out carpets. The city was well fortified, so they had so many soldiers with so many carpets that they just lay carpets around the wall, and Sanherib walked up the carpets and was able to see over the wall into the city of Jerusalem. He looked over the wall and he saw all of Jerusalem. When he saw the whole city, he said, oh, that's nothing. This is the great city of Jerusalem. About this, I gathered all of my camps, I brought all my soldiers. I saved this city for last after I conquered all the other cities. This is nothing. This is a weakling city. This is much smaller and weaker than all the other cities I've captured. So he waved his hand on the mountain of the Beis HaMikdash, and he said, his servant said, let's attack now. He said, tomorrow. Why tonight? Why now? What's the rush? This is going to be easy. We just traveled 10 days journey in one day. Who asked before? How did Sanherib know that he was supposed to conquer the city of Jerusalem? Someone asked him the last test. You asked. So he had a miracle. 10 days journey in one day, God's telling him, Sanherib, this is yours. His stargazers are telling him, today you can conquer it. But Sanherib said, why bother? It's going to be easy. So he said, tomorrow, each and every one of you will be able to... Tomorrow it's going to be a piece of cake when we want to conquer the city. That night, an angel came out and destroyed the Assyrian camp. 185,000 men were killed in one night. They woke up in the morning and they were all dropping dead. So, story number one. The temple is almost destroyed as a result of this sin, as a result of the story of Noah. Story number two. At the very end of the book of Shmuel, so towards the end of David's time, we have a recounting of many little wars, and it doesn't tell us much details about it. It tells us there was a man by the name of Yishbi in the city of Nov, and he was one of the children of Harapha. You remember Harapha is Arpa, so he's a brother of Goliath, this warrior, and he has a spear, some kind of weapon that's the weight 300 coins of copper, and he's wearing a new garment, and he was about to kill King David, and Avishai, David Amal's great warrior, comes and saves the day. What's this talking about? Why is this taking place in Nob? So again, the Gemara fills in the picture. The Gemara says the following. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda quotes Rav. This man who came and almost killed David HaMelech, he was coming because of what happened in Nob. God said to David, till when is this sin going to weigh you down? You are, because of you, the whole city of Nob was murdered. Because of you, Doeg HaDomi is pushed out of my camp. Doeg is one of the people that we say has no portion in the world to come. Because of you, Shaul and his three sons were killed. Because Shaul and his three sons are ultimately going to die because of this sin, because of the murder of the city of Nob. Do you want that all your children will be wiped out, or do you want to be given over into the hands of an enemy? What do you choose, David? God said, you have this sin, you have to pay the price. How do you want to pay the price? So David said, Ribon Shalom, better I fall into the hands of the enemy, and my offspring, my children, should not be wiped out. One day he's going out hunting, and the Satan came and appeared to him in the form of a deer. He shot an arrow, but the arrow didn't hit. The deer continued running. He chased after the deer. He's chasing after the deer, trying to catch it, and before he knows it, he's in Philistine territory. This is David. Ah, good question. Very good question. Are Jews allowed to hunt? How's David hunting? What? So he enters Philistine territory, and this man by the name of Yishbi said, hey, that's the guy who killed my brother. That's the guy who killed Goliath. He grabbed David, bound him, folded him over, and put him in an olive press. He picked up the huge beam, and he wanted to kill David this way. A miracle happened, and the ground under David became soft, and instead of it breaking his back and killing him, he was able to duck under the beam into the ground, into a pit. And that's what the pasuk says, Tarchiv tzadi tachtai velo ma'adu kal sulai. God, you widened the space under me, and my feet weren't sent out sprawling from under me. And that's how David was saved from getting killed. But he's still being held captive by this man named Yishbi. That day was Friday afternoon, and Avishai was in the middle of taking a shower, shampooing his head in honor of Shabbos. You know, a person's supposed to wash his hands, face, feet. So he's shampooing his head. And Avishai looks into the water. He sees spots of blood in the water. And he understands that this is a bad sign. Something bad's about to happen to the Jewish people. Another version of the story is that a pigeon came and started flapping at him with its wings, and Avishai said the Jewish people are compared to a pigeon. Must be that something's happening to the Jewish people. Must be something's happening with David. David's in trouble. So he ran over to David's house to see what's happening, and he couldn't find David. David's not there. Now Avishai had to start running around to find David, and all he could find is one of David's animals. So Avishai said, the halacha is you're not allowed to ride on a king's horse, you're not allowed to sit on a king's throne, you're not allowed to use the king's scepter. But what about in a time of danger? Am I allowed to do it to save his life? So he asked the rabbis, and they said, in time of danger, go. So he grabbed David's mule, and he started riding. And he had kfitza sederech, and as he's riding, he sees Arpa, Yishbi's mother, she's Goliath's mother, that she's weaving, she's preparing strings for weaving. When she saw him, so she took out the spindle from the weaving and she threw it at him. She thought that she'd kill him, but it didn't hit him. So Arpa made believe that, oh, I dropped it. I didn't mean it. Like, she hadn't meant to throw it at him. So she told Avishai, young man, could you please give me the spindle I dropped? Avishai threw the spindle at her and killed her. Arpa's dead. He's still riding toward her son, Yishbi. When Yishbi sees him, he said, now there are two on one. They could win. They'll kill me. So he said, you know what? I got to kill David before this guy catches up. So he threw David up, and he stuck his spear in the ground and said, now he's going to land on my spear, he'll die, and then I'll go take care of Avishai. So Avishai saw that he's bound up, he's about to land on the spear and die. So the Gemara says Avishai said one of God's holy names, and David remained suspended in the air. So David's hanging there, bound up. So the Gemara says, wait a second, why didn't David say that name? Why does Avishai have to say it? So the Gemara says, we have a rule that a person can't take himself out of bondage. This is a rule that the Gemara applies to physical and spiritual things. A person who's being bound up, he usually can't free himself, he needs someone else to free him. The Gemara says, the Gemara applies it also to spiritual things. Very often a person needs someone else to pull him out. The Gemara says, even David, we'll get to it later in the year, even David had a period where he was down, and he felt like, I can't make it, and his Rebbe came and pulled him out. Ira Hayairi, we're going to learn about that. He was David's Rebbe, and he said, David, you're not falling, get back up here. And Shlomo HaMelech also, so long as his Rebbe was around, he kept pulling him back up. The Gemara says, everyone needs someone to pull him out. So as David's hanging there, so Avishai calls out to him. He says, what you doing here? Why are you in this rut? So David tells him, God told me such and such. God told me that I have a choice which way to go. And I told God that I choose better I go than all my offsprings go. And Avishai told him, so start praying the other way. You messed up. Don't doubt in that way. Better your children get wiped out and you don't be given into the hands of the enemy. Why? Because your grandson let him sell wax. Meaning, your grandson let him figure out how to get out of it. Worst comes to worst, your grandson will be poor. But you, don't pain yourself. Which is, he's telling him, people very often in life say, I'll give up everything. They live life bitterly in the hope of giving their children a better life. And Avishai said, no, that's not the way it works. Let your children fight for their own life and you fight for your life. Don't tell God to give up your life. You take care of your life. Your grandchildren, they have to do tshuva and figure out how to save their lives. So David said, you know what, Avishai, I buy it. So David started praying. He said, God help me out. And Avishai and David both daven together. And that's why it says in the verse that Avishai helped him out. And then Avishai was able to take him down. And a distance from Yishbi. And Yishbi started chasing them. So they're running. They're still in Philistine territory. When they came to the village of Kubei, a village that's a border between Philistine and Israeli territory, so David told Avishai, and Avishai told David, they said to one another, let's turn around, what are we running for? Let's take him on. So they were still scared. So neither one wanted to do it, they kept running. And then they said at once, you know what? Can two cubs kill a lion? So they said, yeah, maybe together we could do it. Meaning, they were scared of this Yishbi. So David told Avishai, you go find Arpa's mother. David and Avishai told Yishbi, go see your mother, she's dead, we killed her already. And when they told him his mother's name, so he was startled, and then they were able to overtake him. This the Gemara tells us. Why was David going to get killed? Him or all his offsprings? Because he was held accountable in a roundabout way for the death of the whole city of Nob. This whole story happened, and then the Gemara expands on what happened to his offsprings. And here the Gemara says at one point, we're not doing the whole Gemara, at one point the Gemara says, if there wouldn't have remained one offspring of Kohanim, if not for the fact that one remained, then there wouldn't have remained one from David's offspring. And because the Gemara says there was a time when all of David's children were killed, this came true. David's offsprings were wiped out, but one. Just like the city of Nob was wiped out, but one. Which leaves us with something to think about as far as how responsible a person is for things like we discussed last week, the ripple effect. But what we do has a ripple effect, and David was held accountable. Yeah, just a second. Ari? Jeff, my dear. He said no. Yeah.
Why was David afraid to fight him even when he had someone back him up and see that he wasn't afraid to fight Goliath?
So we've run 5 minutes beyond the time for this class. That remind me Thursday night. Mitzvah will deal with it. It's a good question.